us, and you are listening to It's All About Food. It's September 25th, 2012, and here we are. I'm in the studio in Manhattan, New York. It's a beautiful day. The air is fresh. The sky is clear, and it's really lovely to be alive. So I'm thankful for that. So much in the news about food. I just wanted to mention a few things. Arsenic in our rice and genetically modified organisms in our corn that are making tumors in rats and who knows what else they're doing. All these things are exploding this week in the news. And the question is, where can we go to get food that's not only good for us, but not contaminated with things that we don't want to eat? And honestly, I don't know that I have the answers, because everything is connected on this planet. And when people are doing things in one place, it affects our water. It affects our air. The best that we can do, there's a few things. One is we can buy from farmers and stores that have organic produce, because that's the best that we can do. But in this latest study that came out about arsenic in rice, we know that even organic rice is affected. So that's kind of daunting. But in addition, I always like to say this, and I think this is really important, even though it may seem very undocumented and trivial, and that is, whenever you eat, whatever you eat, enjoy it. Don't worry about it when you're eating it, and tell your body to take the good from the food and leave the things that aren't good for you out and let them pass through. Just let your body know that, and it will listen. We have really powerful minds if we use them correctly. So don't panic. But certainly, if you have an opportunity, write your congresspeople, let them know we don't want to have arsenic in our rice. And how do we do that? Well, we stop using toxic herbicides and pesticides in agribusiness, and we get rid of factory farms because they're giving arsenic to chickens because they're unhealthy, and the arsenic kind of keeps them going until they're slaughtered, and then they poop, and there's arsenic in their excrement, and that uses manure, and it's put on all the fields growing all the plants, and that's how the arsenic gets into the ground, where we don't want it. Okay, so just a little bit of food for thought to get started. And now I want to bring on my first guest. Maya Dow graduated from Russell Sage College, and she received a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. And when she graduated, she took a position with the New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center, which is now a New York Presbyterian Hospital, and she worked in the Burn Trauma Unit, ICU, and became a charge nurse. And after that, she worked with Johnson & Johnson as a clinical research associate in medical immunobiology. And she worked with J&J for a total of 15 years in quality assurance and training for clinical R&D as well. But what we're going to be talking about today is what she experienced being the mother of a son who was diagnosed at a very early age with autism. And this is really a fascinating story. I think we have a lot to learn from it. So let's just jump right in. Welcome to It's All About Food, Maya.
Thank you, Karen. It's really wonderful to be here today. Just listening to you speak a little bit in your intro about toxicity in food brings me back. My son is actually 22 years old now, and he was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder when he was only 2 and a half, and that was back in 1993. So there was no internet. We've talked about this. Autism wasn't blown wide open like it is today, and we didn't know everything we now know about food, about gluten and dairy and large proteins that get in the way of the immune and mental processing for children with autism.
You know, even with the internet and everything that's available to us today, there are still many people that don't have this information, and many people struggle with autism. Now, how did you know that your son had a problem at 2 and a half years old?
Well, You know, you hear so much about children where they had pretty much normal, typical development until the age of 2 or 3 and then started to lose their words and their function. In our case, I think there was potentially some toxicity or an environmental viral trigger maybe going on much earlier, because by the time Brian was 1, it was clear to me that something was a little different. He had trouble crawling, and he had a couple of words leading into age 2, never put 2 words together, which is one of the things you do look for. And then by age 2.5 had lost that. Mm-hmm. I was working and he was in a nursery program and he was not interacting with the other children, not following directions, kind of going off by himself. And the reason I found out at age 2.5, even though I was suspecting things, my medical doctors were not supporting it. And my older sister, believe it or not, who had 3 boys of her own, came to watch my son over Christmas, and she made the observation and shared it with me, which is a lucky thing, because when you have a child with autism, the sooner you know, the sooner you start limiting their foods and giving them the right supplements and the right behavioral teaching, the better chance you have of helping
early
them.
Diagnosis for everything is so critical. And it's all about paying attention.
Exactly.
Okay. And then what did you do?
Well, the most important thing was to get a full, what they call a differential diagnosis, by a hospital. In our case, we already suspected autism, so we went directly. I live in New Jersey, and there are, in the Princeton area, a couple of very well-known and expert programs in autism. And we brought Brian directly there to Eden Institute, and they did an observational diagnosis where they're trying to interact with the child, watching his interaction with the parents, and then doing, you know, some very specific problem-solving coordination testing. But mostly it's the connectedness. And he didn't have language. I guess that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
He avoided eye contact, and he didn't have language, and he would scream because he couldn't communicate.
Now, did you see a difference? A 2.5, it's really hard to know. But do you think there was something that triggered it, an event? And could you maybe tell a difference? I know when kids are older and they've already started to develop, their parents see an on-off difference. Their child just changes and they're never the same, and they try and figure out what it was that triggered it.
Well, in my case, I wasn't sure if it might have been the oral polio vaccine. My son got a second dose of it, and I did see more of a regression following that. But in his case also, I was always watching children at the park, watching the way they moved, use the swings, motor coordination, and eye contact and connectedness. And although my son was always very cuddly and there wasn't that missing piece, those other things were never what they should have been. And he was very sick from a very young age and had a lot of problems with digestion. He was breastfed, and at times when sometimes my milk supply wasn't the best and we tried infant formula, he would projectile vomit the formula. He had a lot of chronic diarrhea as a baby, and so I think that there was a digestion absorption problem going on from the get-go. and that maybe our story was a little bit different because of that, because you need those proteins and nutrients in order to develop proper neurological function.
Autism is a word that's used all the time today, and it covers a wide range, and it's, there is no, like, blood test for autism. It's a subjective kind of diagnosis, and people don't always fit into a particular mold, and I think it's because there's a lot more to it. We may attribute autism to a lot of different problems, and it may be more than one or two or three or four. There's a lot of different things, but it's convenient in some ways to be diagnosed as autistic because then you can benefit from some state aid with schools and help. And so some parents may want to have this diagnosis for their children. But we don't know a whole lot about it. And the thing is, I think many different things can trigger some of the symptoms that your son had. And that's what makes it so hard to figure out what to do about it, because there are probably many different causes. Some people believe it's vaccines, even though, you know, the science is trying to dispute that all the time. And I'm fascinated with this concept that we are, the eggs in our mother's womb were formed in our grandmother's womb. And so our DNA started two generations back and could have been affected by so many different things a long, long time ago. It's really hard to keep track of what might cause developmental problems. Okay, so you were on a path, and you did a lot of different things. So what are some of the key things that you did that helped?
Well, I do want to say that we followed the theory of autism being multifactorial, so that there are many different things that contribute to the problem. And in order to heal a child, you have to look at that from many different angles as well. So the first thing we did is get my son into a one-on-one behavioral teaching program, and he was very fortunate to be accepted into the Douglas Developmental Disabilities Center at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And he was in their outreach program almost right away. And that early intervention every day makes a difference, mm-hmm. because there is that window, even though we now know that neuroplasticity exists well into adulthood in all our lives, the brain is much more plastic between the ages of 2 and 5. And that is a window for recovery and reteaching and establishing that connectedness. But in our case, because I worked in medical immunobiology and I was looking at all these various different studies in my work, I started to see some parallels with certain immune deficiencies and what I observed going on with my son. And lo and behold, when we had him tested, he did have immune dysfunction. So the other piece is it was very difficult for him to gain weight. We would find a connection between wheat and dairy before the big studies came out of Scandinavia establishing the connection with wheat, gluten, and autism. And the way we saw it was he'd wake up in the morning, Karen, and he would be the best he was all day. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he'd start putting things in his mouth, it would be downhill from there.
Wow.
And if he would get a bagel and cream cheese, one of our favorite things to eat in my family, he would start spinning himself in the middle of the floor, toe walking, kind of going off more in his own world. So in a certain sense, it was very obvious, even at 2, that something in the food he was eating was, at the very least, making this problem worse. And
good for you for paying attention. Most people don't. You know, we see such subtle things like teachers probably know this, but when kids have birthday parties in their classroom and their parents, you know, want to celebrate and they bring in cupcakes and candy, and then afterwards they leave their children in the hands of the poor teachers who now have to deal with this sugar overload and the behavioral changes in the kids.
And people love to say those don't exist,
yeah.
But, you know, those of us who are observant know they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, so you found this connection. Now, what is it? It's this leaky gut thing that happens.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, it's hard to know what comes first, a horse or the cart. Does the leaky gut come first, and then you have the problem with gluten and dairy and other large proteins? Or do the large proteins assault the gut lining, and then you have this hyperpermeability? I believe in my son's case, since this was observable almost from birth, that it had to do with toxicity. I ate a lot of tuna fish all my life, almost every day when I was pregnant. So I think I had a high mercury burden myself. And I know there's a lot of controversy surrounding the thimerosal, which was the mercury preservatives used in the vaccines 20 years ago, in almost all of them when my son was diagnosed. But I do believe that the toxicity from our environment is disruptive to that gut lining. And children that are experiencing this are having those large molecules get through the leaky gut, and they circulate as toxins to the nervous system, neurotoxins, and to the immune system. And these kids tend to get sick a lot. They're on a lot of antibiotics, which leads to fungal overgrowth and an imbalance of the friendly bacteria in the gut. And it just goes on and on and on like a snowball, making everything worse. So for a parent to try to unravel all of this, it's a lot of pieces to put together, and it's not easy.
Right. The thing about the wheat and dairy, for a lot of people, I think they just don't believe it will work. And it takes a tremendous amount of effort for parents raising a young child to monitor that and make sure that they keep what they're not even sure are problems out of the diet.
Right. It's hard to commit to something that's so difficult to do when you're not sure really where it's going to get you or your child regarding improvement in their communication, in their eye contact, in their ability to learn.
And then the other thing with autistic children, I understand, is that they're finicky eaters.
You are so right. They are amazingly finicky eaters, and the reason is because they have a hypersensitivity to touch, to the texture of the food. And it relates to their processing problems, just like there can be a hypersensitivity to sound, or what we call tactile defensiveness to being touched on the skin. It's the same thing with the texture of food in the mouth. But one thing I can say is that it is so worth doing, and it's so much easier to do today, to eliminate the gluten, which is the protein in the wheat, and the casein in the dairy. And these products are available in ShopRite and everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. I was sending away from grains from Canada 20 years ago. And when the children are little, if you have the luxury of having a child that's diagnosed early, it is so much easier to control them. The hard thing is when they go to school and they're out of the house and they feel different and see other kids having things they can't have. But one thing, since I know we don't have tremendous time, that I do want to get across to parents is if you try the GFCF diet, which is the gluten-free, casein-free diet that is widely known about in the field of autism now, please be aware that when you have a leaky gut lining, which means large molecules are getting through the intestinal lining that shouldn't be getting through, because that semi-permeable membrane is now more wide open, more permeable than it should be, like a sponge that's wearing out.
Mm.
Be aware that if they can't break down one large protein, like gluten, for instance, chances are they can't break down a lot of large-chain proteins. So you tend to see a much better result if you can take all of them away at once. And so by that I mean soy, corn, eggs, any large molecule that you know about. And, you know, that part sounds harder to do than you think, because now with all this awareness, you can find cookies, shakes, drinks that will say on the label, no wheat, dairy, corn, soy, eggs.
The top allergens.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. Still, it's easier now, but still there are a lot of people struggling because for some reason, I don't know, we all need some sort of Spock mind meld or something so that we all come to the same place at the same time. But a lot of doctors don't know these things still. And certainly a lot of parents don't, and a lot of parents struggle financially and with their jobs, and how much time do they have to look on the internet or research? It can be really overwhelming. I'm sure your nursing background helped you a lot in understanding what you were reading and where to go to look for information.
It did help me a lot. I was very fortunate, not just in my nursing background, but in the job I had at the time in clinical research with Johnson & Johnson, that I was lucky enough to be exposed to information that made me wonder if this was a factor for my son and to look into it. And one of those things was digestive enzymes, for instance. I was looking at a study in children with cystic fibrosis, and they were taking digestive enzymes because they didn't make them and were digesting food very well doing that. So I sought out enzymes for my son, and now we know that anybody that doesn't digest and break down foods well can be helped by taking enzymes with their foods so that you can get those smaller building blocks that our bodies need to make things like neurotransmitters, antibodies, hormones.
The interesting thing, well, you know, nature's smart, and nature has figured out a lot of things for all life on Earth. And she's figured out what humans need, and we've kind of gone in our own direction and reconfigured things, and we're eating all of the wrong things. And I find that a lot of the things that work for one chronic disease or one illness work for another. That's the magic of this plant-based diet. When you eat it, you're reducing your risk significantly for all the chronic diseases. The diet that works for cardiovascular problems works for diabetes, works for cancer, works for multiple sclerosis, works for all the autoimmune diseases. It works, works, works. And a lot of the nutrients that we're lacking are because we're not getting it from our food like we should. Right now, vitamin D is the sexy vitamin because everybody's saying, you know, it prevents this and that and everything else because everybody's working indoors and we're afraid of skin cancer. So what supplements were you giving your son?
Well, I brought my son to nutritional doctors, and it was very difficult in the beginning 22 years ago to find physicians who were interested in being a pioneer in this area with children with developmental disabilities. And the doctor who has been with my son for 13 years and really made one of the biggest differences for us is Dr. Kenneth Bach. He's up at the Rhinebeck Health Center, and Dr. Bach practices integrative medicine. I think he actually was the president or head of the Integrative Medicine Association for a number of years. And what's good about that is when you have a child that's dealing with a critical situation, sometimes you need to put a Band-Aid on it, and that Band-Aid can be a pharmaceutical or a dietary change that might mean we do have to include certain things for a while that ultimately you wouldn't want to. So I had a lot of medical guidance for Brian, and I got many of his supplements from directly from his doctors. But I love Kirkman Labs. They're based out of, I think it's Oregon, and they have many special supplements that have been specifically designed for children with autism, developmental disabilities, children that can't have wheat and dairy and many of the allergens. And they were one of the first companies to come out with an enzyme called dipeptidyl peptidase 4. We like to call it DPP4 for short.
Can you say that again? You said that so well.
Let's just say DPP4. And this is the enzyme that many children with autism and related disorders don't have, and they don't make well themselves. And when you take this enzyme with food, you can open the capsules, sprinkle it on the child's food. That way, they're not developing these, what I call intermediate breakdown products. Like, for instance, when you eat wheat and dairy together and it's broken down only halfway, that forms a morphine-like substance called casomorphin. And guess what? That can make you completely disconnected.
Brain
and,
fog.
You know, in brain fog, hard to concentrate and all those other things.
Pizza.
Exactly. Pizza, macaroni and cheese, cereal and milk, like what do kids love to eat? So it's putting them in this fog almost all the time, and the actual reaction from the gluten can be a delayed reaction, so it can be hard for parents to observe. So it's important to take those enzymes, and it's such an easy thing you can do. You want to avoid wheat and dairy as often as possible if you're trying this diet approach. But sometimes with kids, you can, or it's hard, and that's where the enzymes come in. They help tremendously, and it helps to break down the food into usable subsets that their bodies can regulate themselves naturally the way they need to do. So I know I'm getting off on a tangent.
That's great.
But I just want to say that even though my son was in one of the best one-on-one programs teaching the applied behavioral analysis, ABA, which is the standard one-on-one therapy, as we began to unravel the medical side of the autism and clean up his diet and heal the leaky gut, he became so much more teachable. So instead of running a program 500 times, we can run it 15 times or 5 times, and he'd have it. He could generalize skills easier. So I just feel that the idea of a puzzle piece being a symbol for autism is so perfect. And we need to use that to remember that there are many pieces to this puzzle.
And the more you put together, the easier it is to solve the rest of the puzzle.
Right.
Yeah, I like that very much.
And and each time you put a piece in, you don't take it out when you look for the next piece. Those pieces have to stay in. I'm doing my one-on-one teaching. I'm taking those large proteins, the wheat and dairy, out of the diet. I'm adding enzymes. At the same time, doing some vision therapy if the child needs it. My son had trouble with every processing system. He needed auditory training. And as he got older and he was declassified, actually, from his primary diagnosis of autism at age 7, he still had residual processing problems with vision, motor coordination, and processing auditory directions. So what you need to know is to keep adding those pieces in and doing those therapies, but don't take the other pieces out. Don't forget what got you to that point. Have to maintain the diet. And one thing I don't know if we have time to talk about is also toxicity.
Well, just briefly. Sure.
Okay, so you talked about eating a clean diet, vegan diet, and this is where it's difficult for children that have textural problems, but I've seen so many great recipes that you have for making juices, and you can actually make fun cookies out of gluten-free with adding vegetable juices and other good nutrients in. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing to do. But you also want to be careful to avoid the processed foods that have so many additives and toxins in them. And not only that, but we need to be aware of toxins on our skin, products we put on our children's skin, what's in our water at home. So
there's a lot to think about, and it all matters.
Right.
It all matters.
So it is so far-reaching, but you need to be aware of toxicity, and just eating clean and close to the earth really helps these children so much, because it's hard to be reading the labels on every single thing.
Right. Well, the good news is that your son has done very well. He's an honor student in physics, and he's a senior in college, and he's a jazz musician, and he's got many close friends, and he's doing well. So I congratulate you for that. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back with my second guest. And Maya, stick around, and you can join me in the next half. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Check out my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, where you can find lots of information, and send me an email at info@realmeals.org. We'll be right back.